Our guest today, Michael Jonathan, who you certainly know if you're anywhere near any sort of entertainment electronical device that does either radio or TV or both. You know Michael Jonathan from really what's a worldwide phenomenon, the Woodsongs Old Time Radio Hour. Michael does a lot of things. Does a lot of writing. He also does a lot of advocating for an issue involving licensing of artists versus venues, which I think would be a good solution to enabling artists and musicians to get out and play more if they had their own traveling artists, their own papers, if you will, that shows that they are making contributions to ASCAP, BMI, others who have a right to the money that they're needing, but it takes the burden off of venues. We're going to get into that in detail. We're going to talk about Michael's new album, The Painter, which is kind of our jumping-off point today. The album is inspired by a lot of things happening in Michael's life. We're going to talk in detail about the new album, which is clearly theme-driven, involving painting, which Michael has become a painter since the last time he and I chatted on the air. You're going to enjoy this, our nice visit with, I do full disclosure on Unreal Bluegrass. Michael Jonathan is a friend of mine. I'm happy about that, and we get to talk again right here. Before your ears, thanks so much for tuning in. For the audience of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard a great tune, the statement from a brand new album, The Painter, from my guest I'm going to introduce to you again. Michael Jonathan has been on Unreal Bluegrass many times as a frequent contributor of knowledge and music. Michael, I'm so happy to have you back.
It's nice to walk in the shadows of such a great man. Thank you, Steve.
Well, that was nice. Listen, the Painter album, this is to me a special album for you, and I almost said this. It might be endemic to the pandemic, but I think it's because of what there are a lot of songs in here. And we'll talk about it, but I want to touch on the fact that you're actually painting, and the album is called The Painter. But there are a lot of songs in here that I think are. They're not lonely songs, but you know what I mean? They're sort of longing or like recognition that things are different, and at least the way I hear them. It's the statement I want you to describe a little bit before we get into the rest of the album. But the song and the album, I think, are going to be – someday people will look back and say, oh, this was Michael Jonathan's pandemic period.
Well, it was certainly born from the pandemic. You know, I didn't start painting until everything shut down.
That's what I thought.
And I was shocked at how many paintings sold so fast. So I began to look at things seriously. But it's the album is reflective.
That's a better word. Thank you.
Yeah, it's reflective on what is happening around us in a positive way. It's not a preachy album. But it's a song cycle about music and art and love and life. And the last song I wrote for the album was written while we were recording, and that was the statement. And what happened was the documentary about Harry Chapin was released, and I watched it one evening after I got home from the studio. And Harry Chapin's life was the power of caring. And what he cared about, and he was willing to do something, and his life was a statement. And I was looking at my life, and I was like, what is my statement going to be as a songwriter, as a musician, as an artist, as someone who cares about your community? What is my statement? And my statement is that we need love. We're in a world that is just grappling with anxiety and vitriol and hatred and extremism and riots and all this stuff is going on, and we've come back down to that essential need of love. And to me, that's what the statement is calling for.
Yeah, it is. And we just heard it, so they heard people, the listeners heard you talk about peace and art. Art is being part of that vital expression of artists and art and music and peace, all those things to me, and I think you're saying that, they all sort of go hand in hand, that those are things that have to be connected. There has to be some connective tissue between all of those different things that are human.
Well, to every musician that's listening to your show, and I know you have a very popular program, and a lot of musicians do tune you in, what I want all my fellow musicians to try to understand is that musicians, singers, and songwriters We are the greatest peacekeeping army in history. The reason that is true is because art causes people to stop and listen. And it's physically impossible to fight when you're in the act of listening. It's physically impossible to do that. And musicians and songwriters are part of the great peacekeeping force on earth because they get people to stop and listen. And so that's why in the song The Statement, my final call is that we need love, we need peace, we need music, and we need art.
Mm-hmm.
It all comes together. And I keep going back to Winston Churchill's great comment during World War II when he was confronted by a reporter and said, "Are you going to remove the arts from the budget to pay for the war effort?" And Churchill looked at the reporter and sneered and bellowed, "Then what the heck are we fighting for?"
That's exactly right. Yep, that's a favorite. That's a favorite quote.
That's
right.
Well, that's the power of what art is supposed to be. And shows like yours that stretch the boundaries. It's not just one genre. You accept everything. And to me, that's true art.
Well, I've told you this before. I model this programming effort after your Wood Songs show, where you welcome in great music and have it. And one of the, well, we're going to get to this award, but I mean this Milner Award in just a second. But I really do. I looked at your show as a model of how I would program and how I would introduce guests, and so this all stems from that effort. By the way, let's talk about Wood Songs, because in the interim, between the release of this album around the same time, you received, and I know this to the listeners, I know Michael Jonathan's a very humble person. I know him pretty well. But you won a really great award recently from the governor of Kentucky, the Milner Award. And I'm going to make you speak about it a little bit, because I know you won't unless I put you on the spot.
Well, it was a surprise. I mean, the Milner Award is reserved for who they feel in the Commonwealth is the preeminent contributor to the arts. And it's been given to people like Wendell Berry and James Still. Gene Ritchie, the great Appalachian mother of folk music, is a Milner Award recipient. My dear friend Homer Ledford very deservedly got one. I do not belong on the sidewalk with these people.
I disagree.
I'm serious. They called me from the governor's office and said, you know, we would like to know if we offered you the Milner Award, would you accept it? And my response to them was, I would like you to think about it for at least 2 weeks before you call me back again. This is true.
Really?
And look, you're talking to a guy who, you know, the city of Lexington, out of the goodness of their heart, gave me a star on the sidewalk of Main Street and misspelled Michael.
That's
and
true.
Jonathan.
That's true. And we could talk for a long time about how many times your name has been misspelled. It just happens and happens, and you know.
I know. It's like, so I'm not the guy that deserves the Milner Award. You know? I'm the guy that you buy a free hot dog with after the show because you like the show. You know.
Well,
but what an incredible honor, and there's so many, and I have to say this, there's so many in the region that truly deserve this. J.D. Crow is here. Who has contributed more to the world of music than J.D. Crow? You know, the McLean Family Band has been performing worldwide for 60 years.
Yeah.
You know, they're here. You know, Bobby Ann Mason is a brilliant writer that is known worldwide. You know, she deserves a Milner Award. You know, so I am beyond grateful and more than a little surprised, but more than willing to step aside if they want it back.
Take it back. And you got a really nice, I don't know the artist, and I should. I learn these things from you because then I have to go find out more about the artist that actually made this award, Driftwood. Tell me a little bit about that, because I think it's a gorgeous thing, and they must all be different.
They are different. Willie Rasko is a African-American artist, a sculptor, who works with driftwood that he pulls out of lakes and streams and stuff. He's near Hopkinsville, Kentucky. And my gosh, the award itself is just a beautiful carved thing. And they did spell my name right. So it's spelled correctly on the Kentucky Music Hall of Fame gave me the Stephen Foster Award once, and my name is misspelled on that as well. They gave me one. It's finally spelled right, and it ruins my story.
Well, maybe this was what it was all leading to. Maybe all those other misspellings were leading to this one. Who knows? Who knows? Could be.
I want to use the award for is to use it as a springboard and a platform to let audiences understand how critically damaging the pandemic has been to the world of arts, especially musicians. You know, by April, they're expecting half the venues in America will be shut down permanently. All my friends, all your friends, mm-hmm. Steve, that didn't have day jobs, that were full-time musicians, they've been out of work for a year.
Yeah.
They're on their knees. And the music business was already in bad shape. You know, there's no more record stores left in America for artists to sell their CDs. All they had were the gigs.
Right.
You know, the only way they could make a living is if they were in front of an audience. And the audience is so used to free music now that they're not aware of what that has done to the world of music, and especially the artists and their families. This is a serious, serious condition that the arts are in right now.
I agree with you. I agree with you, and I know you're going to make... I'm going to make some more points as we go through this discussion about the licensing. We've talked about it before, but before we're done today, we're not going to do it right now, the licensing, the venue licensing,
yep.
Which in the event the venues open up again, we'll talk about that. But I want to get back to the album and the fact that, yes, in the middle of this, because WoodSongs, every other venue was unavailable for artists and audiences, and WoodSongs is an amazing show. It's a radio show that's also televised, but it's a radio show. I've been there. It's an amazing thing to see. So you started painting. Another muse must have tripped through your doorway, and you started painting. And you've had good luck with these paintings to the extent that you've been able to keep. I think you've been able to keep WoodSongs afloat.
You know, WoodSongs has more affiliates now than when the pandemic started. And it's true that it's all volunteer, including myself, but there is a physical cost to service public television and satellite feeds and RFD, our television network nationwide, and well over 500 radio stations, including the one that you're listening to now,
mm-hmm.
that they all have to be serviced, and this costs actual money. And I was like, well, how on earth are we going to keep WoodSongs alive? Because what I knew, and as a radio broadcaster and a musician, Steve, you know very well, if I allow the media platform to evaporate because of not being able to service it, there's no way on earth that I would ever be able to rebuild this again.
No, you're right. You're right.
It's on American Forces Radio Network in 177 nations. Every single military base and U.S. naval ship in the world hears WoodSongs twice.
Wow.
Every weekend on two different channels. You know, to let it go is impossible. So how do you service it? And I was like, well, maybe I can do a painting and see if someone will buy it. And I've done 37 oil paintings, and 21 of them have sold.
Wow.
Capital W.
That's amazing. And they're great. You know, if you follow Michael Jonathan, my guest today, on any kind of a social media platform, you'll get to see these paintings as they're developing. And there's a high demand. How many artists can paint that number and sell that percentage? So I will say there's a high demand for the art that Michael's producing on canvas right now, and it's deservedly so. And you keep getting more and more into it. I think that you do pull, as this album does, the painter. You draw from Vincent van Gogh and some of his not stylistically, but some of it, certainly some of the color, and but then you branch out from that also. But they're great paintings, and I congratulate you for finding that, I guess, a hidden talent. I don't know.
It's a talent that a lot of people would like me to keep hidden.
you
make a good point, because I study a lot of the painting masters, and it occurred to me that, you know, the Rembrandts and the Michelangelos, they're incredible and they're amazing and they're breathtaking. But what I leave with is, when you look at their paintings, is I can never do that. And I'm going to use a musical example. When you go to a concert with Bela Fleck or Chris Thiele, you are overwhelmed by the absolutely brilliance of the musicianship. And virtually everybody has the same thought. I could never do that.
Right.
But you look at a Van Gogh painting, and you look at his wide brush strokes and his somewhat sloppy use of the paint, and it's very thick, and you're like, you know, that's a style that I think I could try that. And to me, Van Gogh is the musical equivalent of Woody Guthrie and Bob Dylan. Brilliant masterpieces, but when you listen to a Woody song and a Dylan song, you go, I can play that.
Okay.
I can do that.
That's good.
I can even write like that, which is one of the reasons Woody and Dylan are so immensely popular.
They're accessible. That's exactly the word I thought you were going to go for. They're accessible. And you don't like them. And if you, the musicians you mentioned, there's a lot of them you go see and you walk and you drive home hoping that by the time you get back home, you will have forgotten how unprepared you are to take a stage in that in that setting with those fellows. Because nobody, those are exceptional people, and thank God they're around so we can see them and be inspired. But that's a great analogy. That's a great analogy that Van Gogh might be more accessible for what he left us to look at.
Well, you know, Bela Fleck, Chris Thiele, they are the Michelangelos and the Rembrandts of the music world. Deservedly so. But that's the point that you're making, and I agree with you. You know, a lot of times, you know, you look at a Van Gogh painting, and he inspires you to become proactive. I want to try that. I want to imitate that. I want to put my hand on it. And that I wanted my paintings to look accessible. Not copy him, but learn from his accessibility. And the fact that so many of them sold so fast, it has kept Woodsongs, you know, on the air worldwide.
And that's amazing. I knew that, and I wanted to lead you into that. And I knew that. It's just incredible, you know, and you actually take one of the paintings, and you mentioned Pete Seeger, Bob Dylan, but in one of the paintings, I'm sure it's sold by now, there is a Van Gogh effect, but there's also a little figure down at the bottom that's clearly Pete Seeger.
Yeah, that's my favorite painting. No, I haven't sold it. It's one of those... It's one of those paintings where I just don't want to let it go.
Okay.
So I still have it. Okay. But, it's the one you're talking about is called My Old Brown Earth.
There you go.
It's based on one of Pete Seeger's songs where he's singing about his own passing. And the painting is Pete at the Hudson River with the clear water and, you know, the whole imagery of Pete and his songs are represented in this painting, and it's one that I've gotten a lot of offers.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Some of them are high offers, and I just haven't had the stomach to sell it.
Well, and maybe you shouldn't. Maybe you shouldn't. Michael, talking to Michael Jonathan, if you're just tuning in, and talking about many things, the new album, The Pain or the Inspiration, for the music and also for the artwork that Michael is now producing. We've already hit on the fact that he won this Milner Award, which is, I'll leave it go, so to speak, so we don't have Chris Michael to bring it up again, but it's an amazing accomplishment. This new album, there's so much of the discussion of painting, the process of painting the colors and painting people and painting images, and it is. The Painter's a great title. There's so many songs in here that talk about specifically color. You do some covers on this. You mentioned Harry Chapin, and you do The Cat's in the Cradle, which is, boy, a song that you can just never get out of your head. But so much of this album, I think, is devoted to color, coloring words painting songs. I'll use it that way. I think painting is a good way to describe a lot of art other than just putting it on canvas. I think you're painting images and painting songs and wordscapes and soundscapes. I think those to me are kind of an effort of painting. I think that's what this album really reflects. As I listen to it, doesn't mean that's correct, but that's what I get from it.
Well, you're very close. What I wanted was the poetry to reflect what art is. And I'm using painting and painters as an analogy.
Okay.
You know, one example is the song Vincent in the Rain is likening the love of your life to a Gauguin, or you know, or Michelangelo, or Vincent himself. You know that this woman is a masterpiece to you. There's another song on the album called Othello. Othello is a Shakespearean tragedy, where the lead in the tragedy was completely, fully deceived. And I'm using the Shakespearean tragedy as a comparison to a blank canvas. And the role of the artist is to deceive you to think that where he smeared that paint has become an image that has value.
Well, see, that's a perfect introduction, because I do want to cut to that song Othello. We talked a little bit off the air, Michael and I did, and talked about some songs to share during this discussion part. Othello was one of my favorites. The Statement had Stars on it as my current favorite. They changed day to day, but that's a pretty good lead up to what I want to play now. And if you want to say anything else about introduce it, I'm going to play Othello. You won't go away. I'll come back and finish talking to you. But that's going to be the next cut if you want to make any more of a statement about it.
No, let's let the music speak for itself.
Very good. There, right before we cut, we talked about the song you just heard, Othello, from The Painter, which is Michael Jonathan's newest release. And, Michael, you did a great job describing it. There's so many great, deep, moving poetic. I'm going to go back to this image thing because I think you say it better. The poetry of this album as a whole. And because of you, I think because of your experience in the painting world now, you do kind of pull it back into painting. But there's so many tunes on here that have color, not specifically spoken in terms of artwork and painting work, but there's colorful statements and blues tonight and Blue Moon, which is love your treatment of Blue Moon. We've all heard a million different versions of that. Michael interprets things his own way, and Blue Moon is just a real nice harmonica play. There's a lot of piano in this album, which I don't remember hearing that much in prior albums.
Well, the Legacy album had a lot of piano in it, but it wasn't mixed up front like it is here.
Okay.
And the piano player is Jason Coleman, who is, I'm forgetting his grandfather's name all of a sudden. He did the song Last Date.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, come on, help me.
I can't. I don't know the answer. We'll find it.
On major radio, and I can't remember.
We'll find it. We'll find it, and we'll put it in.
Floyd Kramer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so this is his grandson.
No kidding.
Yeah, Floyd Kramer's grandson, Jason, is playing piano on the Painter album. It's the second album that we've worked together on. And, you know, the album is bookended with title cut, which is The Painter, which is a derivative of Don McLean's Vincent Starry, Starry Night.
Yeah, it does.
So I let the album bookend. It starts with The Painter, and then it ends with Vincent Starry, Starry Night, which I thought was a great way to end the album, you know, because of all the imagery in Don's, you know, wonderful song.
Yeah.
But I wanted to treat Vincent my way, and so you know, I sing it differently. I use different phrasing, and we added Jason's piano to it, which I thought worked beautifully because it makes it different from Don's rendition of it. But it's part of the album concept of using the analogy of painting for what's happening to us in our life. And, you know, we just heard Othello. You know, what I found was what spurred me to write that song was finding out during the Black Plague through Europe that killed millions of people, Shakespeare was quarantined. He was in isolation in his house for 3 years. His 11-year-old son died from the pandemic, and he was quarantined in his home protecting his younger son from this plague. And it was during this massive pandemic of total isolation, Shakespeare wrote some of his most brilliant plays.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, but he wrote some of his major work during the Black Plague, during the pandemic, when he was isolated. And what I decided was that this COVID plague that we're in now is going to end. And what's going to happen is that the music world, which is already decimated, when there's this sudden tsunami of work that gets unleashed on the...
It'll be kind of like a renaissance of modern music, I guess, really what you're talking about as far as a movement or an age where all this stuff, all the music will come back, and how we deal with it now with fewer venues and even fewer radio outlets. But you're right. I think you're right. It'll all come. People have been dying to, horrible word to use, people have been waiting to get their music out, and they can't.
Well, it's going to be, you know, everybody's home. Stuck home like Shakespeare. They're writing, they're preparing, they're recording, they're putting their book together, they're writing their plays. They can't do anything with it, but they're writing, they're creating, and once this pandemic is over, the public is going to hit with a tidal wave of stuff.
I think you're right.
And I'm like, you know, I want to be paired with something that is going to matter.
Before we move on to, I want to talk about the licensing, the venue license again. But before we do that, I want you to talk a little bit about a very beautiful song on here, Make You Feel My Love. It's also part of The Painter. Then I want to talk to you about the licensing issue, which we've discussed before, but it bears repeating. Go ahead. Tell me a little bit about Make You Feel My Love.
You know, Bob Dylan wrote a beautiful song. Several folks have done it. But I wanted to reinterpret the song. I put the song on an album as a gift to as a surprise gift to my wife, Melissa, who had twins. They're 6 years old now. And any woman that's had, you know, gone from being single and footloose and free to married to suddenly you're pregnant to, oh my God, it's twins. To have that kind of life change. And you really have to sometimes really reach out to make sure that somebody knows that you love them very much. And it can take a lot of patience and effort and work. But love is one of the most beautiful colors on the human palette. And I thought that Dylan's song reflected the color of that palette that I wanted to have on the album. So I interpret it differently on the guitar. We added a string quintet and Jason's piano.
I have, my notes include piano and pretty. That's the reminders to me. I just thought it was a beautiful rendition. And Michael always, to the audience, always reinterprets. When he does covers, he's always reinterpreting them. And when you hear, I think we're going to get out of here. Not yet. We're going to hear the Vincent that we all know from Don McLean. And it's different. You've already mentioned it, but you can easily recognize that there's different emphasis and some of the notes are played a little differently. So we were talking about music venues, what's going to happen in the pandemic, and whether any are going to come back. And so it kind of put on the sideline an issue that you brought up many times, about making it easier for traveling musicians with venue licensing as opposed to, to the artist licensing. Can we talk about that again? We've done it before, but I think it should be opened up again.
Sure, and for the sake of the audience, I'll give the cliff note explanation so it doesn't sound complicated. When you go to a cafe or a bar or a club or a festival, whoever owns that stage has to pay BMI, ASCAP and CSAC, three different permits in order for them to allow a musician to come and perform on their premises. Not one license, three. And it's become very expensive for venues to allow musicians to play on their stages. Then that's why a lot of clubs and bars and performing areas have stopped presenting live music because it's become very, very expensive. During the pandemic, most of these restaurants and clubs and bars are shutting down. When things reopen, they're going to be financially on their knees if they exist at all, and they are not going to pay BMI, ASCAP, and CSAC to allow somebody to come in and sit in the corner of their restaurant and play music. They're not going to be able to afford it. And so my issue is we should get rid of the venue licensing thing, get the venues off the hook, and convert to artist licensing. In other words, I'm an artist. I get a license. It's like a driver's license. I can now perform anywhere, any stage, any song in America. Just like a driver's license. I don't need anybody's permission to drive on the road. If I have a valid driver's license, I just go. But to me, that's what an artist license should be. And what that's going to do is make the venues want to hire musicians because they're off the hook now. It's just capitalism at its finest. What is going to cause the transaction? The current business model of venue licensing is preventing the transaction. It's outdated. It's the musical version of the rotary phone, and they're hanging on to it for dear life, and it doesn't work.
I love this idea. I know it's been well received. I know you've talked publicly about it in all kinds of different arenas, colleges, and whatnot. And I know you get good responses.
Yeah, I'm planting seeds for it. It's going to take an act of Congress to change it. And there's a lot of powerful musical mechanisms, corporate owned, that love the old business model. But the world of music is hurting. Musicians are hurting. Songwriters are not getting paid. When Steve Martin goes into a club in Cincinnati and sits there with his banjo and he plays a Raymond McLean song on your banjo, Raymond McLean doesn't get any royalties because nobody knows you played his song.
That's right.
And so my solution with an artist license is you go to an online exchange run by BMI, ASCAP, and CSAC. You type in your playlist. Every artist knows what they're going to play. And now they know how to divide your licensing fee, who to pay. Now Raymond McLean is going to get paid because Steve Martin plays his song when you go out.
See, and this, I'm talking to Michael Jonathan again, and we've mentioned this a lot, Michael. You've been on the show numerous times, as many times as I can trick you into doing it. And I always have time to speak about this issue with you because I know you've been planting the seed for several years, but it's a huge sea change that's going to have to happen. But you're getting it out there. I want to get it out as much as I can also. And although I want to talk to you about the new album and the painting that you're doing and the painter of the album, and just anything that you're working on, but I always want to have a chance to put that out there again, that this is, I agree with you 100%. I am 100% behind this. I think it's going to, and we've had discussions, Michael, with other people that are still, it's that first thought that this, you can't do this. This is not how it was ever done. You can't do this. You can't do this. Well, you're right. You can't right now, and Congress has to do something, but I think it makes so much sense in coming out of all the venues being closed, I think it makes even more sense because you're right again that the venues that can't survive and didn't survive, they're not going to reopen up and have someone from ASCAP. They're doing their job, come in and say, hey, you owe us a fee because you have live entertainment playing songs that don't belong to the artist.
Well, every good idea begins with somebody else saying no.
That's right.
You know, and no matter what it is, they're going to say no, but that's just human nature. But this has to happen in order to save the world of live performance. And I'll tell you one other B part of my whole proposal is everybody's complaining about Spotify and YouTube and all these streaming services not paying the songwriters. I think if Congress changes the law so that we can go from venue licensing to artist licensing, part of the law change should be streaming services need to donate a percentage of their income to the online artist exchange. And that money gets applied to the artists so that most artists who feel like they can't afford a license can get one for free because it's paid for by the streaming services.
You know, I say I almost said we, and I have very few chances to make this point, so you have to, and I will help you as I can. This concept needs to be pushed back out again and again and again and again and again. It's never going to grab hold the first time, and it hasn't, but it has to be part of the conversation, and because I think it makes so much sense, people can't believe it can be done, and I believe it. You have been pushing this for a while, and I see it as the solution now more than ever.
Well, artists need to work, and what you have to do is look at the existing business model and say, this really sucks. It's not working. You know, BMI and ASCAP and CSAC, you know, bless their hearts, you know, they send agents into the bars and clubs threatening to shut these venues down if they don't pay hundreds of dollars a year in these licensing fees. And what the public doesn't realize is that it's up to the club owner, the bar owner, the restaurant owner, the festival promoter. It's up to them to submit the artist playlist to BMI and ASCAP. And guess how many do that?
As few as can.
Yeah, like none.
Yeah.
So that's why when you go, and I want to be careful, I'm not ridiculing BMI and ASCAP.
No.
They're doing what the law is allowing them to do. They're not breaking any rules. But when you go to Nashville, a good sign that the business model is broken, you go to Music Row in Nashville, and the only palaces left to the old business model is BMI and ASCAP corporate offices. Everything else is gone. And that is proof that the old business model doesn't work.
I think you hit it on the head. I don't know how you came up with this idea, but every time we talk about it, it makes so much sense. And I also recognize the obstacles to it, but it just has to keep. I will help you to the extent that you're here, and I'll mention it whenever. It has to keep be brought back up often. And I think you're doing a great job of that. Back to the album now. I want to say this. Michael Jonathan has been a great aid to Unreal Bluegrass in many ways. I don't need to mention all of them, but I do if we're talking about the song Vincent and Don McLean. I have, through your great help, I was able to rope Don McLean into being on Unreal Bluegrass twice because you gave me so much good insight into his love of bluegrass and banjos. And so I'll get back around to this final song that closes out the end of the album, but you gave me so much good information that when we were talking about his last studio album that was released, that's why Don was on, and I got into banjos, he went crazy. He couldn't stop talking about banjos. He often said, call me back, we'll talk about banjos. You gave me that insight and all that little special bit of knowledge of bluegrass he had recorded, and he's been back since then, because all I have to do is say, send him a message, say, Don, you want to talk about banjos, and he's here right away. And I credit that to you helping me make that impression with him. And the guy loves bluegrass, and he's recorded it all, what you told me about. So there's Don McLean. Thank you for that insight. It's helped me immeasurably. And then we'll get back to the music that the guy wrote in your version of Vincent, what we all know as Starry, Starry Night, which is the last cut on this album.
Well, Don was lived in the same county that I grew up in New York along the Hudson River. I was Pete Seeger's neighbor along 9D in Beacon, New York, and Don lived in the next town over, Garrison, New York. And he was a Pete Seeger protege. He was one of the first crew members on the sloop Clearwater and was very influenced by Pete Seeger and the Weavers. So I have that musical kinship to Don. When I did the Painter album, I talked to Ed Freeman, who was the producer of the American Pie album. And Don used a Martin 0021 slot neck to record Vincent, to fingerpick Vincent. And that's what gave Vincent that that very wooden, lighter tone to the guitar that's on the record of Vincent. So when I created the bookends, the title cut, The Painter, and then ending it with Vincent, I used a Martin Double-Aught 21 slot neck guitar on both those songs so that the bookend would make musical sense. And I picked The Painter, finger-picked The Painter, the same way, the same style, even though they're completely different songs, the same style as Vincent's Starry, Starry Night.
And that's recognizable, and I'll probably play that leading up to this interview. But it's, I get it now. I'm glad we're having this discussion because I wouldn't have picked out that nuance. But, yes, that's right. Yeah, of course you're right.
It's called a derivative. When you create a song that's completely original, it's totally unique, but it's recorded or performed to sound similar to something else, to remind you of something else. So I wanted my song, The Painter, to be a derivative of Don's song, Vincent, because I knew in my mind, when I went into the studio, these were going to be the bookends. This was going to be the first song, and Vincent would be the last song. They would be the bookends of the album.
And there's so many great songs, and we've talked about a few of them. There are so many great songs on here, Michael. It's just a really very enjoyable album. I know. Well, let me ask you this before we get to Vincent, the Starry, Starry Night, Vincent, and your version of it. I need to let people know how they can find this CD, The Painter.
You know, if you spell my name right.
Which only 1 out of 10 people can.
Yes, right. I don't know why it's so hard. MichaelJonathan.com. MichaelJonathan.com. You can Google it, and Google will get you there. Yeah. Go to my website, MichaelJonathan.com. It's available now, of course. When I was putting the album together in the studio, I was trying to decide what the album cover needed to be. And I was looking at all these different paintings, and maybe a Van Gogh painting or maybe something else. And I decided to create my own album cover canvas, my own painting. And that's the album cover that you see for The Painter. Mm-hmm. It's a reinterpretation of a Van Gogh style. And that became the cover of the album.
It's very pretty. It's very pretty and works. So with that being said, Michael Jonathan, do you want anything else you want to say to intro Vincent? I'm gonna say one more thing after you do that, but if you have anything else you want to say about your version, you probably already did it, but just do a little intro into Vincent, and we'll get that, and I'll let you go.
I think Don wrote a miraculous composition. The poetry has always been impressive, and I'll tell you, after talking to Ed Freeman, the producer of the American Pie album, to get really the musical depth of what this song was, it was a real privilege to try to reinterpret it.
I'm going to play that tune. I'm going to let you go, but let me say this, Michael Jonathan, you are a folk singer. You're also my friend, and I value that friendship, and I know that we're going to talk again, maybe before the end of the year, certainly as things develop on. And thank you so much for all the support you've given to this program and all of the nudges that people don't know that you've secretly elbowed and passed tips to me. I appreciate that greatly.
Well, let me just say one thing on your behalf, Steve. I hope the audience understands that it shows like Unreal Bluegrass is what's keeping original music alive. Corporate controlled radio, I'm not knocking it, but that's how it's working these days, is not the gatekeeper between the artists and the audience anymore. It's shows like Unreal Bluegrass, it's radio hosts like Steve Martin that are the gatekeeper between original music and the audience. And three cheers for you. You deserve your own Milner Award, Steve.
Well, listen, thank you, my friend, and I appreciate your friendship. We're going to play Vincent for the audience. I'm going to let you get back to painting some more paintings and writing some more songs. And please keep in touch. I know that I will find you somewhere.
Thank you, Steve.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks again, Michael Jonathan, for appearing on a most fascinating session here on Unreal Bluegrass. Thank you so much for tuning in.